Hey, welcome to Inside Windows Phone. I'm Matthias Shapiro. I'm a Windows Phone technical evangelist. And here with us today is Matt Heidinger. Matt, what do you do?
I am a brand new program manager on Windows Phone, working on the DevPlat team.
Okay, well, welcome.
Thank you.
And we've invited Matt here today to talk about our big August theme in Inside Windows Phone, which is Build for Both. If you're not familiar, one of the great things about our Windows platform is that you can write a lot of code that works both on your Windows Phone and on Windows 8 tablets and Windows 8 devices of all kinds. And so Matt gave a great presentation at Build and Build 2013 about this, and so we thought we'd have him on to talk a little bit about how we share code across platforms.
Yeah, my talk was specifically on, I was actually not with Microsoft at the time, so it was more of a kind of real-world perspective. My previous company had been building a lot of apps, building for both, and thought it'd be a good opportunity to kind of share some of that expertise with the Microsoft community.
Yeah, so what kind of projects have you worked on building for both, and is there anything you can show us?
Well, at Build, specifically, I built this app called Real World Stocks, which is what you see kind of behind us here. This is fully, you know, open source. I publish everything, and this is a phone and a Windows RT project. So if I launch the phone one, you'll see it's a stocks app. I choose stocks just because it's a you know, it's a topic, a domain most people are familiar with.
Easy to get the data.
Easy to get understand the API. So this is the phone version. And if I, somewhere on here, let's just launch it. This is not my machine, so learning around. If I just launch this guy, you'll see the same kind of app for Windows. So looks very similar, right? They look similar. It should, well, I haven't obviously worked on the snapping mode too much since then. But they look extremely similar if you look at the two, and they share actually a huge chunk of code.
Okay.
That's really what my talk was kind of about. It's right. It's sharing code, it's tools and techniques for that, and then architecture around that, but also the design language, which I think is a really important thing. They're not identical, right? You don't want your phone app and your Windows 8 app to look identical.
Right.
But you want them to feel the same and really feel like the same, you know, the same experience using both. And that's kind of what I try to drive home.
Right. Yeah, the phone is a sort of this ultra portable version of something. You're probably not going to be doing a lot of typing with it.
Right.
And then the desktop is something you could be using a keyboard with. You could have it in your hand as a laptop, but or as a tablet, but it's not that ultra portable glance and go sort of solution.
So yeah, exactly that. And just the one last thing to drive home, it's the look and feel of it, but it's also, when are your users going to be using this?
Right.
A common mistake I see a lot of people make is to try and build the exact same app, right, on both, the same feature set, the same use cases, and that's mostly incorrect.
Right.
People will be using your, even if you're something as like a coupon site, for example, your users will be needing very different things on their laptop. Maybe they want to do more management. Maybe you have like store management type stuff on the laptop, but on the phone, they probably just want to access it, present it easily, and just think about how the different ways your users will use the app on the different form factors.
Right. So is there an app? So yours does a great job of that. Is there anything? I'll just jump in. One thing that I really like is if people want to see kind of an example of this in the real world, if you go to look at the Cocktail Flow application, which is on Windows 8,
yeah,
Windows
that's a beautiful app.
Different feature set, slightly different navigation pattern. It looks great, but the thing that you need to keep in mind is we're not looking at the exact same app.
Right.
We're looking at something that fits the form factor that people are using it on.
And you can tell it's a beautiful app. The same person built it. You feel like you're using the same thing, but tailored, right, for the form factor.
So if someone wants to start, just start up an application building, and they want to target both Windows Phone and Windows 8 platforms, so what are they going to do first?
Well, I would probably reference someone to this project here. I think at the end, maybe we'll give them a link to show where you can download this. But, you know, the thing that I like to drive home is it's a starting point. It's not always going to be, do this here, what's your use case here, you know, you'll be mix and matching techniques. That's really the important thing when you're sharing code, and really it's architecture, right? Architecture is a very gray area. There's not a lot of you know, silver bullets in everywhere. But I think this will be a good start, and this solution architecture is going to be very common, and it was in a number of the apps we built for, you know, clients, professional apps. This scales, this isn't just demoware. But yeah, it usually starts with this core.
Right.
And then we typically have two UI projects. And there's a couple tips and tricks maybe I can go into to kind of make this a little easier.
So the core, what kind of a project is that?
So that is the first thing that you would really dive into if you were learning how to share code.
And this is
That's a portable class library.
Okay, yeah.
So everyone's familiar, if I go file new project, I can pick go to Windows and I can pick a class library. We've been doing this since the dawn of .NET.
Right.
There's a new type called a portable class library. And if I were to select this right now, it's actually going to ask me which frameworks that I want to target.
Yep.
And that will allow me to filter down to that surface area that's only common between all of them. And it's really handy. You get IntelliSense only specific to those. And it just kind of makes things feel pretty natural.
You can't accidentally access an API that is going to suddenly break your code because it doesn't run on that platform.
Exactly. So if you look at core, so if you go into properties of core here, I've just double clicked on it, and I click change, you can see that this library will target .NET 4.5, Windows Phone 8, and .NET for Windows Store apps. So it's only that service area.
Right.
That means if I have, say, a Silverlight 4 project, I could not reference this assembly because I haven't provided that surface area.
Got it.
Obviously, the higher the surface area, the more modern you're going to get new features lit up, like async, things like that. So you know, it's a trade-off. It's a balancing act. If you pick the lowest common denominator, you're going to get that API surface area.
Yeah.
So PCL is definitely the first place to start. Things that are going to go in here are going to be helpers. This is great if you have any kind of just helpers, string helpers. Logging. This is a good place to put your logging so all your projects can have it. What you're always going to have, though, in basically every app that acts to the internet is going to have models. So if we're a stocks app, we have things like stock snapshot, we have a watch list, and we have our services. So in this case, I use the Yahoo Stock service, which is going to parse actually CSV. It's a CSV-based library. So I just want to abstract that away in my core so that when I'm implementing this, or even, say, handing it off to another team to do the phone implementation versus the Windows implementation, I don't want them to know all that.
Right.
So you can put that in a PCL. You can see I have full async await. I can use this HTTP client. That's the thing I would definitely recommend checking out. It's a NuGet package, microsoft.bcl.http, microsoft.net, one of those.
Yeah.
I'll have to check. You would see it in here, microsoft.net.http. And that's going to give you this really nice async awaitable HTTP stack that will work on all of them.
Yeah, I've used that, and that is absolutely my number one guidance with PCLs, is that you bring this in, and all of a sudden your service code just becomes real smooth.
Absolutely. So that's really the PCL. My advice, put anything you can in there, right? Make it as big as possible because that's the assembly that's, you know, it's the foundation. It can be used everywhere. You're not going to risk, if you put too much in your phone project and then you realize, oh, that helper would be really handy on Windows, you're kind of in a copy paste or refactor situation.
Right. Well, and I've seen people use these and extend it past Windows 8 into WPF apps.
Absolutely. I actually even used this. I was planning on doing some kind of push notification stuff, so I used it in my Azure project, which is a website.
Yeah.
And because it's an assembly with .NET 4.5, I can just use it right in Azure.
So, that's cool.
Yeah, it's not only client-side, which is nice.
Okay, so we've got our PCL and then the other two projects?
Yeah, so the other two projects, and there's a couple tricks that I'd like to kind of highlight in some of these. So I do realworldstocks.ui.phone, and then if you look in here, you'd see what you normally see. Okay, you're going to see your XAML, right? These are both XAML projects in this case, and your views are going to be different. I don't make any effort to reuse views between my projects. I just feel like the tooling may not be there just yet, and it's just not a practice that I think really has much value. This is a situation where you will probably copy and paste like snippets of XAML.
Right.
You know, they're different controls, they're different things. There's just a different UX paradigm that you don't really want to necessarily reuse unless it really makes sense.
Yeah, I've seen some people reuse maybe templates, but even then, if the template starts getting too complex, something beyond simple layout, then you're looking at different controls and different styles, and you just have to navigate that minefield.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just it's a technique. Like I said, it's a gray area. But my advice would be to try not to reuse your UI and your XAML. Really put some thought into it. And how are people going to use my app on different platforms? And maximize for that.
Right.
So XAML aside, there's still code behind, and there's still view models. And those are going to be very similar, right? And in each of these, I'm showing a list of stocks, and then I'm showing a list of news regarding the symbols that I care about or the companies I care about. So I'd like to reuse a lot of that. So that's where our view models come into play. Where, you know, a view model, I'm sure there have been talks even on this very show about MVVM maybe.
Yep.
It's not, I'm not recommending you do MVVM in every case, but if you do, it really does maximize sharing ability because it's just a class file, right?
Right.
It's a class file with some data and some behavior, and you can share that between them. So the other major technique that I'd like to highlight, if I zoom in right here, actually let's show a control. So in my control, if I were to launch this app really quick, if you look really quickly, you'll see an arrow. It actually spins into place and it color codes itself based on whether the stock is up or down.
Okay.
So I'd like to reuse that control, right?
Yeah.
That sounds
simple
sounds
enough.
Like something I could reuse. So I've written this control called the price change arrow. It's got a couple visual states, but you'll notice a couple key things in here. I've got these pound ifs, and some of you may not have ever seen these. Some of you may not have seen them in 10 years.
Yeah.
These pound ifs are called compiler directives, and these allow me to tweak the source file based on the platform that's actually compiling it. So the way I think of it is, and you can actually see it's being grayed out here, I've opened this in the Windows Phone project. So based on which what actually has color here, that's how Windows Phone sees this class file.
Right.
If I were to open this same file, which has this little arrow in it, so if I zoom in here, you'll see this little shortcut arrow, right? It looks like a desktop shortcut. The way that got there, if I zoom back out, so if I delete this, didn't actually delete it from disk, that control arrow. So I'm going to hold Alt. This is the key tip that everyone should know when they're sharing code. Aside from sharing an assembly, you're just going to want to share raw source code, C# file. So I'm holding Alt, and I'm dragging this price change arrow down into the Windows RT project. And what that's going to do is bring that file over with a tiny little shortcut. And all that means is that this is the same exact file on disk, but it's now shared between these two projects. So they kind of each have their own view of this source code. And that's where these compiler directives come in. Windows 8 defines this NetFX core. So it has, and the unfortunate thing is that Windows 8 and Windows Phone have slightly different method signatures for things.
Right.
So you can see all I'm really changing here is a protected method versus a public method.
Right.
So it lets you make minor source tweaks for platforms without rewriting the entire file.
Right. But if you wanted to do something like maybe delay the creation of a control or do something specific, you could write it into this file, change it, and then it's going to
Absolutely. You can change behavior. You can do all sorts of things. I always advise people to not really get carried away. There is a point where copy and paste does become a legitimate solution.
Right.
If this control starts to get crazy and we get feature requests coming in, and this control becomes huge, it becomes the next list box.
Right.
It may be severely divergent between the Windows Phone experience and the Windows 8 one. And then developers coming in, and you can see it's already a decent amount of cruft that my eyes have to kind of glaze over to see, what am I really seeing here?
Yeah.
Who's compiling this? What is it looking like? And if you really start to change these, it may be time to take a step back and let's just make these two totally separate files and start evolving them on their own. So it's a trade-off in that
case. Okay. Neat. So are there... Is there anything else that you...
One other trick I really like to highlight, because the biggest thing when you start linking files, so realistically, if you were to look at this this WinRT and I were to open up some of these folders, you could see price change arrow, that's a linked file, some controls, none of my models were... platform adapter is one actually other pattern we can kind of talk about, but as you start to link these files, you run into really annoying namespace issues if you're kind of like OCD about it like I am. So I like my namespaces to be named after the project. So in this case, you would kind of assume this is realworldstocks.ui.winrt. But in fact, it's realworldstocks.ui.controls. And it's the same way in each of my projects. I don't think the WinRT platform adds a ton. So what I do is I go into properties, and the assembly name is still realworldstocks.ui.winrt, but I changed my default namespace, just realworldstocks.ui.
Gotcha.
So when I link files between both of my UI projects, you don't all of a sudden get a phone namespace in your WinRT or kind of the other way around, because then it gets a little confusing and it just gets a little like bloated. So I've just found that just UI.controls, that means enough to me.
Yeah.
I know what project I'm in. I know whether it's my phone project or my WinRT. But then when you start to link them, they're just UI.controls. You don't have .phone.controls, which doesn't make a ton of sense when I'm in Windows 8. I don't want to see a phone namespace. Yep. So small little tip there, if you just change your properties, if that's a pattern you like, check it out. And that way, when you create a file, it'll just give you that namespace. It won't even throw the phone in there.
And that goes to the overall issue of the architecture, is that we're creating a clean architecture, something that can be shared, worked on by multiple people, and is going to work moving forward. Speaking of which, moving forward, I get a lot of questions about, we're working on great stuff and what's coming down the line, and how does this fit into the future of what's happening with Windows and Windows Phone as things start to pull together?
Yeah, absolutely. So at the end of the day, we're learning and we're investing into just good, solid coding principles, right? Just good, clean architecture, thinking about what we're doing, not just kind of hastily banging things out. Mm-hmm. And those are patterns that'll stick with you your entire career, right? Sharing, we're absolutely, whether you're a Microsoft developer or otherwise, we're in a cross-platform world. Mm-hmm. Maximize code reuse and pattern reuse. It's not always about raw asset reuse. It's a lot of times just about reusing the same skills, the same patterns you've seen, common, well-known computer science patterns that I can walk up to another developer, explain to him why I made this decision given, you know, the certain scenarios, and they kind of just get it because we're following well-defined things.
Right.
So in that regard, absolutely, the things we're learning today or investing in today to share between platforms, it's a good investment.
Yeah.
The technology should improve, right? This is not the world's best story right now, but I think that's well known, right? I think there are being investments that this could be better and that we're really at the cusp of this kind of cross-platform world and that tooling, all of it, the patterns are going to continue to evolve.
Yeah. So if they want to take a closer look at this code or see your talk,
this exact project and all these things, if you want to see an even deeper dive, if you just go to channel9.msdn.com, click on the Build 2013, my talk is called Real Talk. I made it to be, it's not all, you know, pie in the sky type stuff. There are some things that, you know, real world stuff you'll have to consider. We go into what we covered and then quite a bit more, you know, in an hour. And then if you look in the comments section, you'll see a link that I did put this entire project up on GitHub. You can download it. You have to enable one little thing to enable package restore in Visual Studio, but it'll just F5 as long as you have the phone tools. And then you can just play with it. Personally, that's how I like to learn. I just find, how did they do that? That's kind of neat. Why would they make that decision? And then you can always reach me, on Twitter or anything like that, and if you have a question on it, and I'd happily discuss this kind of stuff.
Great. Well, thanks, Matt. And we'll be talking more about Build for Both in a little more detail on a couple of subjects in the following month, so stay tuned if you're interested in the topic.
Thanks, guys.